Welcome back to another Inside the U podcast. You can visit the website insidetheu.com, email the show, insidetheupodcast@gmail.com, or follow us on Twitter at Inside the U. I'm Christopher Stock. I'm here with David Lake. We're going to talk a little bit about the football team. They've been having some community events lately. We're also going to talk about recruiting with Nate Adelson. Then we're going to talk a little bit about the baseball team. They're getting ready to start regional play this weekend. David, just your thoughts on kind of how things are going right now.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, it's summer, so it's slow, but it's definitely the time that we build up to the football season. So I think it's kind of a fun time in that way with Mark Richt having his first season at Miami. So we're going to see some UM summer camps pop up here in June. So that'll be fun to follow and cover and see how those are going to be different under Mark Richt. And, you know, just in general, see how the team comes together over the summer going into fall camp. And I know you went to a community relations event, Chris, last week. Miami held three of them, I think, three or four. And they basically went to schools. Was it after school programs or was it like recess? What was it exactly?
Well, there were three last week. It was different. So two of them were at an elementary school and the other one was at a community center, and the community center was an after-school program. So with that, I was able to make to two of those. And so after the community, you know, the after-school program at the community center, they kind of did some activities in the gym and hung out with the kids. And there were some players there, maybe like 15 players or so. And they interacted with them for maybe about an hour. Then the next day, which was great. I mean, I thought that was a good, the community center one was okay there at South Miami, but there at Tucker Elementary School, and these places are near IUM. There's probably about 25 players there. And what they did was they broke up the players. About two or three players went to each classroom and spoke to, students. I was in the room with Brad Kaya and Justin Vogel, and there's probably about 15 students, fourth, fifth grade. And they asked the players questions, and they ranged from all kinds of stuff between, silly things of how'd you get so tall, or, to things like, what do you do when you don't get along with your teammates? And I thought it was interesting, particularly with Brad, obviously, just listening to his responses. And there was probably about 10 media members there watching too. So I'm sure Brad was aware of us there, but his responses were good. And, it was just kind of interesting to see how they relate with the students. And then after the classroom stuff, they went outside and, we're outside for a good while and played basketball with them, kickball, threw the football around. And, really, I told you afterwards, David, after I called you after the event was over, I was like, we don't get to see him in this light too often. It just seemed like this was as happy as I've seen him in a long time. The players, I mean, they really enjoyed it and had a good time. These events, this happens at these kind of events, but however, I think it's also the kind of the mood around the program right now with Mark Richt, and there is some excitement. They're having fun. They talked about that in the spring. David, you talked to a number of guys too, and yeah, they're having fun, but they're working really hard. And I think that was an interesting combination of things. And I was able to talk to some players too. So yeah, it was definitely a productive event. You've already seen some articles on it on the website there with more to come.
One guy who was out there that it was newsworthy just that he was there. He wasn't able to speak to the media, but running back Mark Walton was there at that event. I guess technically is he suspended? How would you kind of categorize it?
Yeah, we asked the media relations guy there about it. What's the status? Because we knew he was going to be there, but he wasn't going to be able to talk to the media. And he said he's still considered suspended. I think there's, I think if you're looking at a positive sign as far as Mark returning to the team, I think it seems like it's only a matter of time. I mean, why include him and these kind of a thing, yeah, this kind of a thing, if he's not going to be a part of the team? And Mark was a guy, and David, we talked about on a podcast before, when the story first broke, and with Mark Richt's past in terms of other guys leaving the program at UM, it didn't seem like Mark was going to be a part of the team. And I said that I just didn't see how it was going to work out for him. But at this point, I think most people would say they expect him to be on the team, and maybe, I don't know if he's going to have some game suspension, but certainly things have changed as more details have come out. And Mark was there, and it was interesting. He wasn't, and Mark, been around him a little bit for their high school and obviously at UM. He wasn't a guy that was just going to stand in the corner and just kind of talk to people. He was right in the middle of everything and playing basketball. And I think a lot of people saw the video I posted on the site when they lined up and he dunked on about 5 to 10 kids. And, he was definitely having a good time, and you wouldn't have known anything was going on with him off the field with how he was acting. So he seems to be handling it as positively as possible.
How about, I mean, it's only been really maybe 6 weeks since we saw the guys last, you know, in the spring game, middle of April. But, you know, since then they've kind of started getting into the strength and conditioning program that they do in the off season. Could you see any changes to bodies when you were there?
Honestly, not really, David. And that's not that it hasn't happened. It just feels like it doesn't feel like it's been that long since we last saw him. So maybe if there's some differences, and not to say guys aren't improving, but it wasn't anything eye popping, and maybe if more time had passed, because this has happened, David. We've seen it before where, you know, it's been a few months we haven't seen him, and then you kind of are surprised. That happens in high school too. But I think the biggest thing that I kind of take away from it, and I know we've talked about a lot, I know the fans talk about a lot, but this defensive line, for years it's been talked about, you know, especially with the scheme that they had before, and, you know, the guys not producing and it being an issue with the defense. And, you know, when I was at these events, I was able to talk to multiple defensive linemen. I mean, they're the guys that I was intrigued by and curious to see how things are going for them. And, you know, and David, we talk about RJ McIntosh in particular. A lot of people don't know who he is or know much about him, you know, just the recruiting process. And then last year he wasn't, you know, that kind of thing. But I think he's a guy people are going to have to know. And I had a good talk with him, and he seems ready to go, and he has high goals. And I'm definitely going to post an article about it. I think people are going to be excited to hear what he had to say. But I think just physically looking at him, he's a guy that, you know, just physically looks like he's ready to go. You know, he looks like he's a guy that can make plays. And we saw him make plays in the spring, first we got to see. But I think defensive line in general, those guys are very intriguing to me, because I think you're going to see definitely improvements. And you talked about, David, it could be a strength instead of a weakness like it's been.
Yeah, I mean, I think it has to be for the defense to be, you know, where we expect a Miami defense to be, because they're going to need that defensive line to really put pressure on quarterbacks, so that alleviates some pressure that the defensive backfield might feel, because I think that group is going to have some struggles this year because of numbers and really just overall talent. I don't know if it's necessarily at the level that a Miami defense needs it to be. I know one thing you said you were going to ask the guys about was, and you know, this is something that's really been the talk of the offseason, really, is the indoor practice facility. You know, what did the guys kind of say about that possibility and what it would mean for the program?
Yeah, and that's something I'll definitely put an article together for more people to read it. But if you're listening now, I was just kind of curious what the players are thinking. And I think the fact that they know it's coming, that they're more open to saying, like, yeah, we definitely need it. Whereas before they might, you know, we don't have it, it's fine, you know, but they're excited. You know, the young guys are, I mean, even the upperclassmen that won't get a chance to utilize it, so to speak, but they're excited for the future of the program. And everybody's just excited. And one thing Brad Kaya said, he was excited that, you know, he thanked Mark Richt. He went to his office and thanked Mark Richt for the $1 million donation that was reported that was going to happen. And Mark kind of told Brad that, you know, it wasn't supposed to get out there, the news and whatnot. And that Brad really liked that he heard from his coach, not just that he did it, but that it was supposed to be a little bit more anonymous or not supposed to be out there. But anyways, yeah, the players are excited. And definitely, you know, I think it's going to be something that's going to be announced. Yeah, I think it'll be announced before August, to be honest with you. I think there's a plan getting closer. There's more steam. And I think that, I think we're maybe not in August, but who knows? I definitely think it's coming in terms of the plan. So it's definitely a good sign for things to come.
It's a good step for the Miami program too, because I mean, it definitely shows that Miami's willing to put their money where it needs to be in order to compete with the big time football programs. Cause I mean, whether you think Miami needs an indoor practice facility or not, I mean, the reality is everyone else pretty much has one now. So in order for it's a big recruiting tool. It seems like the vision for Miami's indoor practice facility will be, that's just where football is. So they'll have, a weight room there for football. I guess football coaches' offices will be in the IPF. So it's definitely another big step. And it's good that Mark Richt is pushing this through, because it is something that I think Miami needs in order to keep up with everyone else.
And David, we talked about there's always been talk ever since we've covered the team about the indoor practice facility, and things have picked up lately. And then that thing at the pro day, and one of the players even said it, we definitely need it. And I think the pro day was kind of definitely a telling sign. And I think that was, a lot of people were disappointed, and right there, that could have been easily fixed. And for those that don't know, weather was an issue and guys were forced to run in the rain in front of scouts and affected times, and we're talking about borderline, draftable guys, and I know that they were pretty disappointed. Worked so hard, trying to show off and show out to the scouts, and with the rain. So yeah, indoor practice facility sounds like it's coming. People should be excited about it, and yeah, it's another step in the right direction for the program.
I know one thing that you plan to write on from these events too is you talk to a lot of guys about the difference in the strength program now that Gus Felder is the new strength and conditioning coach at Miami. What were just some quick takeaways you got from the guys in terms of what's being done differently now?
Yeah, one of the things why I wanted to ask is because it's something that I'm personally interested in, David, and I assume, you or the fans are they're curious about it. We can talk about the numbers of what guys lift and all this stuff, which is great, but I think point of emphasis and overall theme and the way they want to go about it is very interesting because it's not changed. I mean, we've had multiple coaches change since we've covered the team, but the strength staff has essentially stayed the same. Each head coach obviously comes in with their own plan, and former strength coach Andrew Swayze would address, kind of go with what the coaches wanted. But this is completely new, and I thought the big thing was there. It's definitely more high intense workouts, and even labeled as somewhat of a CrossFit type workouts is what they're doing, as opposed to more sitting and waiting, traditional lifting. They're implementing just different aspects of the weight training program. I thought that was something that each of them pinpointed. I'll address that in detail in an article, and I know people will be excited to read it because it's very interesting with what the players were saying. So it was definitely good, and they're excited. And again, like I said before, David, that they are saying they're working really hard, and the coaches are really on them. But on the flip side, they're saying they enjoy it, and I think that's great, and that they want to be pushed, and they want to be successful. I think the seniors that I talked to talked about that too. They just, instead of worried about a breakout year for them, they just want to win. They don't want to leave without leaving their mark. And I know fans and most people in the media think things are going to take some time for Miami to win. But the players aren't thinking like that, David. They want to win. They're putting it all in. They want to do well this year. They're not looking to build for the future or looking at this as a process. So it'll be interesting to see how much of a difference Mark Richt will make on the field immediately, because we're already hearing so many positive things before the season has started.
Yeah, it seems to me like, I mean, the new workout, just the system they're kind of putting in right now, it's going to lean out the linemen, defensive and offensive linemen, so they'll be in better shape. And it also seems like it'll benefit the team maybe in the fourth quarter, because it seems like, these new workouts, they're never really resting, so they have to kind of learn how to fight through some pain and some fatigue. And that's a big key in the fourth quarter when you got to win close games. And that was an issue for Al Golden teams, really, just playing well in the fourth quarter. So I'm interested to see how all this pays off during the fall.
Yeah, one thing kind of I want to go back before I forget. But the community events, Alkadeen Muhammad was a guy I wasn't able to talk to, but he was a guy that the kids all gravitated towards. I thought that was interesting. There was he was at the community center, and they had the players. They were or the kids were told to go group up with a player, and a lot of them. And this is before they really even talked, but a lot of them like flocked to Quan, and it was kind of interesting. Just as he's a big guy and. He's got the blonde tips in his hair right now, so he looks cool and big. I thought that was interesting, and he really spent a lot of time with the kids, and you know, we've spoke highly about him as a player, David, and we both think he's due for a big year. And
yeah, it's funny because if you just look at Muhammad and, like, you know, if you're a 9-year-old kid, you don't really know the team too well.
Right.
You just go off what guys look like. I mean, Muhammad looks like a really good player just physically. You know, he looks like he's going to be in the NFL one day. So that's interesting.
Yeah, and no doubt. And other than Brad Kaya, I don't think a general, you know, kids, and they don't know too much about the Hurricanes right now. There's not a lot of so-called star power with guys they just know. So yeah, that was interesting. And another guy that really related to the kids really well was Sonny Adogwu. And he talked about how he wants to give back to kids, different places he's lived and whatnot. And he was, you know, big hugs, and, you know, he's a big personality, and the kids really related to him. And there was one time I saw there was probably like almost 10 kids giving him a hug. So he was having a good time. And on the basketball court, these guys, the UM players weren't holding back. And we mentioned the Mark Waltons, but there were other guys just lining up these 8-10-year-olds, dunking on them and having a good time. So it was funny. And I think it was interesting. Some of the players, you could definitely tell that they're football players in the sense that they don't have a lot of basketball skills, and regardless of how talented they are. And I think that's a little surprising too. And always fun to watch. So
one thing I wanted to ask you, I mean, I'm, you know, looking at your photo gallery from those events, two guys who, you know, were either injured from the spring, like Scott Patchen sustained an injury during the spring, and then Darian Owens, who is working his way back from an injury that he sustained last year during the season. You know, just in general, Chris, how do those guys look just physically? I mean, are they walking around? Are they on crutches? Do they look heavy because they haven't necessarily been able to work out like they would normally?
Yeah, that's interesting. Real quick with Sonny, because he was a guy that missed the spring. I asked him, and he says he feels great and all that stuff, but he says he thinks by August he'll be ready to go and no issues there. So I think that's a big thing. With Darian and Scott, what was interesting was the events they were at, they stretched with the kids. They did stretching, and one thing was interesting was they didn't do, you know, nobody was telling them what to do or what not to do, but they didn't do certain stretches and, you know, and it's with their injuries, you know, they just didn't do certain things. And they both kind of looked at each other and smiled and kind of like, I don't want to do this. So I thought that was interesting. Darian definitely looked bigger. I don't know if it's, he just looked bigger. We haven't seen too much of him, but, and I wanted to talk to, especially Darian, I wasn't able to talk to him. He got out of the gym before I was able to talk to him, but, I think it's definitely interesting to watch. Maybe if they do, they are going to do future events, but those are definitely two guys that I'd like to get a little bit
in the spring. I did, you know, Darian was around. He's doing his like little workout things during the spring while the team's practicing. And I did think Darian looked thicker than he did, you know, during the season before the injury. So that's going to be interesting to see if he can get back to running like he can, and also getting back into the type of shape he needs to be in to be a good player. I guess, was Nick Linder out there too? Was he around?
Yeah, briefly. He was there the last event. He was out there. I didn't get a chance to talk to him either. I didn't pay much attention to him, to be honest with you, but okay. There's a lot going on, so I don't have anything to say on him, but he was out there.
Okay. Yeah, just I guess he looked normal if he didn't really stand out to you.
Yeah, so.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it sounds like a good event, and there'll be more of these throughout the summer, I'm sure. You know, and it's always good buildup for Miami football. It's definitely an exciting time.
Yeah, definitely. So just kind of switching gears, I know we wanted to talk to Nate a little bit about recruiting. We've done recruiting before. You know, we've talked about, you know, especially in the spring, you know, we talked about, you know, some of the events that we were able to go to at FIU and whatnot. So Nate, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Great. Yeah, we've been talking about the football team and for a little bit right now. We just wanted to bring you on, talk about recruiting. You know, we've talked about local recruiting, obviously, a lot going on, and you focus a lot on, you know, just the whole landscape, especially with national prospects. Are there some, I know David wrote an article recently, some 10 names to know, or Nate, are there some things that's kind of going on right now, in particular with recruiting, that you'd like to share?
Well, just as far as a general trend, before I even get into any specifics about a certain prospect, one of the most obvious things that stands out, and it's not necessarily a local trend or a national trend, but generally a big difference that I see under Mark Richt, is just that they're not running around and scrambling as much trying to find targets. Like the offer numbers are much more under control than they were the past couple classes, and that had really accelerated under Al Golden, and it was something that, in my opinion, had gotten kind of out of hand. You couldn't always get a read on who they wanted, who they were serious about, who they were really targeting versus who was just another name on the list. So with Richt, it just seems like the guys they really want are a lot more obvious. There aren't as many of them, but maybe that allows them to really lock in and build stronger relationships with a couple specific guys that they really targeted, rather than spreading themselves too thin across, you know, a greater variety of guys, but ending up not building anything meaningful with a lot of the guys they're looking at. Whereas Richt seems to be doing a good job. It just seems obvious who he likes and who they're serious about.
I feel like, you know, the May evaluation period, Nate, is a time when things kind of become pared down in terms of coaches. It becomes obvious who the coaching staff really likes, and it becomes more apparent which schools recruits are liking. And, you know, going into the summer, that the summer is a time when a lot of guys commit to those schools. So I guess I would ask you, you know, after May, spring evaluation period, who are maybe two or three guys you're looking at over the summer that maybe Miami might be able to pick up in the summer, or Miami's in very good shape with right now in May?
One guy who really, a lot of the guys that we'd bring up as prominent Miami targets are guys that have been recruited for a long time, have been targeted for a while, and are not guys that came up during the spring evaluation period. But the first name that pops into my mind as a guy I think Miami fans are just starting to get familiar with and should really be paying more attention to is the offensive lineman Nick Brahms. He's out of Navarre, Florida, which is up in the panhandle for those that don't know the area. And he's a guy that Miami had been monitoring all along, or maybe not all along, but at least for the past few months. But offensive line coach Stacy Searles went up to see him twice during the evaluation period, liked what he saw. It seemed like things were trending in the direction of him getting an offer anyway, but things really solidified for him during the evaluation period. They went up and saw him, gave him the offer that he was waiting on, and it seemed like that was a really meaningful one for him to get. So that's absolutely one that I would watch moving forward. I don't know if he's going to necessarily commit in the summer, but that's a guy that Miami really needs to get on campus. He's been on campus once already, but if they can get him on again, which I believe he's planning to do, that's when you could see them really make a move with Nick Brahms. And offensive line is a big need in this class. He's actually more of an interior guy, and I know they're looking very heavily at offensive tackle, but if they are looking to take a guy on the inside, Nick Brahms is as good of a candidate as anybody. He's not only is he a great football player, really impressive kid, you know, very well-spoken, has Ivy League offers, so he really is the total package, and that's, I think, particularly important in offensive linemen. Any offensive line coach is going to be really intrigued by a guy who's as sharp as Brahms is and can pick up things as far as his knowledge of the game.
Nate, I was curious, you know, with the new staff and whatnot, I was curious if there's maybe a different location or you can tell that they're going to be better at a certain location, either in the state of Florida or outside of Florida. You know, we've talked about, in particular, I just want to say Georgia, for example. We thought Georgia was a little bit ignored under Golden staff, whereas the previous staff with Randy Shannon was such a point of emphasis. And, you know, Texas was a big deal in recruiting for Miami at one point. Are there areas that you can tell, like, this staff is starting to either make ways in or has a chance to do well in, maybe that the previous staff was not?
I do think Georgia is the most obvious one, like you mentioned. Of course, there's the obvious ties with Mark Richt having been there for the last 15 years, but as well as some of the other assistants that are now at Miami either had previous ties in Georgia or worked under Mark Richt at Georgia. So the staff, the current staff does have a lot of connections there, and it makes sense. Obviously, Georgia is a state that's loaded with talent, just like Florida, and of course, obviously, Texas and California. So obviously from a geographical standpoint, it's just the next state over. So it makes sense that Miami would be there, but that's really, Georgia was a state that was recruited under Al Golden, and they did land some guys from there, but it's clear that this staff has taken things a step further in Georgia. That's obviously their number one out-of-state destination, whereas with Golden, it was one of the main states. But with this staff, it's clear that they are more focused in Georgia than they are anywhere else out-of-state. And you look at the guy they just landed a week ago, DJ Dallas. That's not only is he a big-name prospect, but he's already really taken the reins from Miami from a recruiting perspective, taking that leadership, trying to land other guys. So he's not only talking to guys in Georgia, but Dallas is a particularly big name in Georgia. So it'll be curious if he can convince any other big time Georgia prospects to take a more serious look at Miami. I know he's certainly trying, no doubt about that.
Yeah. One guy, DJ Dallas, I've seen is recruiting hard recently is a recent offer from Columbus High School cornerback Trajan Bandy. He's committed to Oklahoma at the moment. He's a 4-star recruit. He's kind of an undersized corner at 5'9", 180 pounds, but I think everyone is in agreement that he's probably the best cornerback in Dade County this year. And Miami didn't really go all in on him because of his lack of size, Nate. But now that Miami has offered him after evaluating him in May more closely, what's your take on Bandy now, Nate, and kind of can Miami flip him from Oklahoma, in your opinion?
Bandy was certainly always a guy that I felt Miami should take a strong look at. I know the new staff certainly has a preference for taller defensive backs and taller cornerbacks, but you watch a guy like Bandy, and it's hard to not like the way he plays. Now, you may not like the fact that he's 5'9", and I'm sure that may have caused the staff some hesitation, and that's absolutely why I believe the offer didn't come until very recently. If he was a little taller, I think it would have been there months ago. But now, you know, all that's pretty much water under the bridge at this point. They've decided they want him. They're probably going to make him a priority moving forward. Would he have loved to have had that a couple months ago, maybe before he committed to Oklahoma? Absolutely. You know, he was a Miami fan growing up, and I think that opportunity does still exist, but they're going to have to convince him that he really is wanted, because he can easily ask them, where were you, Miami, when I had offers from all these other schools, when I committed to Oklahoma, and you guys weren't showing the same interest level? It's going to take time to overcome maybe some of those hurt feelings. I do think it can be done, but I think they're going to have to work on him over the summer. And the good thing that they have working in their favor is that the coaching staff is not the only people that can help Miami's chances with Trajan Bandy. They have a commitment from his teammate, Christopher Henderson, at Columbus. Obviously, they're close being teammates and good friends. So Henderson's certainly working on Bandy. Like David mentioned, DJ Dallas is working on Bandy. So they're going to have a lot of people in their corner. So it's not going to be an effort solely put forth by the coaching staff. It's going to be almost kind of a group effort. And I do think that could be successful for Miami, but it's going to take some time. I don't see anything imminent or anything happening too soon.
Nate, do you think is there a similar player to Bandy, you know, in terms of either a productive player that doesn't have a Miami offer that you think potentially could, either locally or just a guy to watch, that maybe a guy that you like or you've heard good things about that you think that maybe the staff will eventually come around on? Or is there just a similar guy to Bandy in terms of that?
Bandy was certainly the obvious example, and there's always one or two of those guys every class, especially local guys that all the fans out there are asking, why doesn't this guy have an offer? He's so obviously a talented player. What does the staff see or not see in him to cause them to hesitate? So Bandy was that guy for a while. Now that Bandy has been offered and they're getting very serious about him, the only other guy that I might put in that category, he's not as obvious of a guy as Bandy, is Nadarius Fagan from Southridge. He's kind of a tweener as far as linebacker and safety goes. He certainly has some other big offers. LSU comes to mind. I don't know all the schools on him. I haven't followed him quite as closely because Miami hasn't gotten involved. But he's made it very clear that a Miami offer would be a big deal for him. Obviously, Miami has multiple kids committed at Southridge, wide receiver Rodney Scott, running back Bentavious Thompson, 2018 wide receiver D. Wiggins. So Miami has plenty of momentum, and then also the safety Billy Gibson. Miami has plenty of momentum at Southridge, and a guy waiting on an offer definitely would be Nadarius Fagan. Unlike Bandy, I knew the staff's hesitation with him was on his height. I know Fagan's a little bit on the skinnier side, so it could be that, but I'm not exactly sure what they need to see more of with him, but he's certainly the next guy I would kind of put in that category, even though he plays a different position than Bandy.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I'll say about just their linebacker recruiting is I think, you know, they got three early enrollees from the 2016 class in Shaq Quarterman, Michael Pinckney, and Zach McLeod. And I think they do feel like those guys are going to be three starters. You know, probably two of those guys will probably start this year, and then all three might start the next season. So I think they like what they have at linebacker now. They're still going to recruit linebackers to come play for their defense. But I just don't know if it's that big of an emphasis where they're going to necessarily go after Fagan types where, you know, kind of some question marks there. But yeah, one thing I want to ask you, Nate, I guess, how about the commits? Any of those guys at this point, are you watching in terms of wavering? Are those guys all pretty solid in your mind?
One guy I am keeping an eye on, although I'll preface it by saying I feel pretty good about Miami's chances to keep him, but just a guy that another school is making definitely a strong run at is who I mentioned earlier, from Columbus, their cornerback commit, Christopher Henderson. Florida's really pushing hard for a flip there. They've gotten him on campus multiple times. Henderson did commit early, and he did have some big offers when he committed, but he continued to get big offers after he committed. So I think that has something to do with the fact that he is looking around a little bit. Now, I think really he talked about Alabama as well, but I mainly think Florida is the threat there. I know Miami feels confident about keeping him, but I don't know if it's necessarily going to be easy. Some other guys they might be able to take for granted and know they're going to stick without much to worry about. Henderson, I think they're going to have to stay on, and especially with him being committed at the cornerback position, cornerback is such a big need in this class that they cannot afford to lose a local guy like Henderson, especially who has such explosive speed. He's newer to the position. In fact, he hasn't even really played that much cornerback, but his athleticism is undeniable. He's got length. His speed is, you know, really pretty special, and he's shown that on the track as well as on the football field. So he's a guy that absolutely they need to keep in this class. He's really, as I think about the commitment list, he's the main one. Oh, the other one is the running back from Southridge, Bentavious Thompson. Florida's also making a run with Thompson. I think he may have mentioned LSU in the past as well. But again, I think Florida is the threat there because Florida has a commitment from former Miami commitment, tight end Kamori Gamble. And Gamble and Thompson are teammates. So I know Florida is working every angle they can to hopefully flip Thompson. So those are the two guys that stand out to me as guys that Miami either may be in jeopardy for or really need to fight to keep.
Nate, obviously with Mark Richt, new head coach, but a new staff. And I'm just curious if there's a guy on the staff, an assistant coach, that you think that's really making a name for himself in terms of being a potential top recruiter or a guy you're hearing quite a bit or quite a bit of positive things about from recruits. Is there a particular coach that you're kind of hearing a lot about as really doing a good job on the staff?
I think there's a couple that come to mind pretty quickly, which I think is a good sign, because if I was asked the same question about the previous staff, it may have been harder to pick a guy, or there may have only been one. So the fact that I have to debate between a couple guys is a good sign, because you never want to be reliant on one guy. You want to have multiple guys that can connect in different ways with different kids, because at the end of the day, a lot of recruits are different from each other. And so you just have one person, he can't connect with everybody, both just for the fact that, you know, he may not have the personality to, but more than that, he doesn't have time to. No one guy can recruit everybody. So you have to have multiple strong assistants if you really want to be a force on the recruiting trail. So, but one of the guys that comes to mind pretty quickly is Coach Kuligowski, the defensive line coach who Miami got from Missouri. He just seems to be a guy that has that credibility. He's coming from Missouri, and Missouri has a pretty good recent tradition of having strong defensive linemen in the SEC and then sending guys on to the NFL draft and guys who have done fairly well at the professional level. And Kuligowski's been doing it for a while, too. He's not a new coach. Certainly kids can connect well with a younger coach, but for Kuligowski, he has an established track record over a longer period of time. But I think that gives him instant credibility with defensive linemen when he says, hey, look what I did at Missouri. I can do the same thing with you if you come play for me at Miami. That's a fairly strong sales pitch. So I think he's one of the first guys that comes to mind when I think of a guy who's a formidable assistant on the recruiting trail.
Yeah, I guess my last question for you, Nate, would be the month of May evaluation period, which new offer that went out in May maybe excites you most? Is there a guy who is really good that Miami offered in May and Miami now has, you know, maybe somewhat of a chance with, would you say?
Certainly, we already discussed a couple at length, being Columbus cornerback Trajan Bandy and then the offensive lineman I brought up from Navarre, Nick Brahms. But aside from those two, another one that is certainly an intriguing one for me is a guy named Shannon Reed. He's, again, another kind of tweener linebacker safety out of Dunbar High School in Fort Myers. And he's just a guy, he's going to remind some people of Jermaine Grace and what Jermaine Grace was coming out of Miramar in the 2013 class. He's got some length, a little bit on the skinnier side, but he can really run, really cover, but he hits well and he tackles and he wraps up. So he's kind of a guy that he's not a huge national name yet, but he's really accumulated a lot of offers, especially during the evaluation period. And being a guy from Southwest Florida, you know, Miami's always going to be in the conversation there, and he doesn't have offers from Florida and Florida State. So if he wants to stay close to home, Miami's certainly going to be, the option that he would go with. Now, he seems to be taking his time, not rushing anything. But for an in-state guy like that who seems to fit the system and be pretty much exactly what defensive coordinator Manny Diaz wants in his linebackers, I think that's a guy that I expect Miami fans will be hearing more of over the summer and as the process rolls on.
Yeah, that's great, Nate. I mean, tons of great stuff. And obviously there's things still going on in the summer. UM summer camps is coming up. There's other events, and we'll definitely catch up with you about, you know, just other updates, you know, recruiting, people that love recruiting. There's plenty of updates that come up and all the time, and definitely keep checking out the site. Nate does great work, and David does a ton of stuff too. So keep checking that out. Nate, we'll let you go, and I appreciate the time, man.
Okay, thanks for having me on.
All right, see ya.
See ya.
David, definitely want to, you know, switching gears completely to baseball. We don't talk a lot about baseball on the podcast, but it's tournament time. Teams hosting the regional. They got the number 3 national seed, 45-11 on the regular season, ACC regular season champs. They've got a team that not only can win the regional, but keep moving on. They've got a chance with the legitimate national title contender. But as you know, all the teams that get to Omaha, you just kind of get to Omaha and see what happens.
Sure.
But first, just for those that have paid too close attention with this team this year, what do you see are maybe that its strengths and what makes them so tough?
Yeah, well, in terms of hitting, I mean, Zach Collins, Miami's catcher, is probably one of, if not the best player at his position in the country. He's by far Miami's best hitter. He hits for power. He hits for average. And he also takes a lot of walks because, I mean, frankly, teams don't really want to pitch to him. So he gets on base. So I think their hitting starts with Zach Collins. And then you take a look at their pitching. And I think their pitching is deep. They have 3 or 4 good starters. And then their bullpen has been really good this year, too. Led by their closer, Garcia. So I think it's a well-rounded team. they don't necessarily have a ton of power bats other than Collins and maybe Willie Abreu, but the rest of the guys in the lineup do a good job of getting on base. So I think they're a good team.
You mentioned the on-base thing. That's the thing Morris was most proud about. He was at the question was asked, you know, you got a team that hits 300, you know, it's 41 total home runs, so it's not a power hitting team. And you mentioned Collins and Abreu, they've got 23 between them, and then Hayward's at six, and then the next highest guy's at three. So it's definitely just mainly two guys. And the question was asked, would you rather have a team, you know, that hits for average, that can maybe, you know, just maybe it's better for the postseason as opposed to relying on a home run. And Morris kind of said, I like guys that get on base, and they got an on base team on base percent of 399, which is multiple guys over 400. Collins at 540, which is ridiculous.
Right.
And another thing that Morris mentioned too, that he said this might be, you know, it just might be the best defensive team that he's had. So, and if you look, that, you know, not a lot of guys with errors, and that stuff is such a big, such a key part when you're talking about every at bat matters in the postseason. So those are the things to watch for. And, you know, Collins, I talked with Collins a little bit, and he said this team, you know, maybe not as much offense as last year, but from last year's team that made it to the College World Series. But he said it's a team that multiple guys can beat you or come up big, and we've seen that lately. So it definitely.
What are your thoughts on the pitching staff?
You know, it's interesting. You know, the big thing is they've had guys really step up. You know, with Justin Lepore, you know, he's 9-0 with the 2.17. He's a guy that was a midweek guy who's at the beginning of the year, and then he's grown into a weekend guy, and he's a guy that'll definitely be counted on. But he's a guy that didn't, you know, this is essentially his first year really making an impact. And Michael Mediavilla, he's a guy, same type of thing. He's their top pitcher. You know, he's got a 10-1 record, a 3.23 ERA, and he's another guy that has really elevated his role this year. And so they're kind of two new guys, but the numbers they're putting up are ridiculous. And the only thing I would say, if there's like some sort of maybe an area that maybe you'd like to see improve more from the starting pitchers, is maybe their strikeouts aren't as high as you would like. You know, all those guys are well under a strikeout an inning. And you say that just because if they're pitching to contact, you never know what could happen in the postseason. But, you know, maybe that if that's an area that you look at. And, but other than that, they got depth, and they've got, you mentioned the bullpen. So it'll definitely just a well-rounded team.
Yeah, it'll be fun. I think they, you know, they're in their region. So it's for people that don't follow college baseball, it's four teams in a region. Miami is hosting it at their ballpark. So they're hosting Florida Atlantic, Long Beach State, and Stetson. So FAU, Florida Atlantic, is the number two seed in that region. So they're thought of as being the second best team, the team that'll challenge Miami. And they have a good shortstop, CJ Chatham, who's going to be drafted in the top 10 rounds of the MLB draft probably, and I think they have a good FAU strength as their bullpen. So their starters aren't necessarily as good as their bullpen. And Long Beach State, they have one of the best starting pitchers in the country, Darren McGaughan, who's 10-1 this year with a 1.98 ERA in 15 starts. So he's a guy that you got to figure will either start against FAU or Miami. And if he starts against Miami, that's going to be a tough game to pull out for the Hurricanes. And then Stetson, I mean, they're at the regional, and they're kind of just usually the fourth team at a regional is just happy to be there. And there's a big difference between Stetson and the other teams in the region. So, I mean, it could be interesting, but really I do expect, just because Miami has by far the best depth of any of the teams in their region, and they're just the most well-rounded team in the region, they should get through and to the super regional rounds and host a super regional too.
And for those people that haven't been down to a game this year or seen even regional play, I would definitely recommend if you've got some time on your hand. It's a good atmosphere.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, games are at 1-7. Assuming the weather holds up, it's a good time. And but, you know, it's just a good weekend, and, you know, see how things balance out. And the big thing to watch is every game is just how teams put together their pitching staff, you know, and you definitely
right.
it definitely makes it harder when you lose your first game and then you're trying to put it together. And some teams might be good, but then if they don't have the pitching, they run out of pitchers, and then they're kind of out of the regional. So pitching is such a big deal in the regional, and you definitely want to get that first win, which makes the one seed, it's one of the biggest benefits of the one seed, because like you said, David, the four seed is usually quite a bit of a drop off, and in this case it is as well. So you get that 1-0 start, and then you're kind of in a better, much better.
And it's spot. It's a double elimination kind of tournament for people who don't know college baseball. So yeah, I mean, it's a fun time. I highly, if you're in the Miami area, I highly recommend you go check it out. You know, regionals, it's a great time for just baseball junkies. You can kind of spend all day at the ballpark and watch a ton of baseball. And then super regional, that stage of the tournament is just super intense. You know, just two really good teams battling it out over a weekend. The atmosphere is really great for super regionals.
Yeah, and that's a best two out of three for those best of three series there. And Miami would likely host, have to put in their bids afterwards. But yeah, because they're a national seed, they'll likely host the following weekend. So assuming they get through and all that. So yeah, definitely check them out. We'll have some more articles on the team. And I know some people have been wanting articles on baseball, so we'll definitely have that. But yeah, that's about it, David. Again, the camp events are, it was good talking about the football team, even though we're a couple months away. Fall camp's going to start that first week of August. And, a couple months away. But, David, camp's coming up, and it just seems like there's always something with the team, and there's always information. So, and definitely I just want to, we thank people for listening and whatnot, but I definitely want to thank the subscribers, especially this time of year, for staying with us. And, again, we're trying to get as much information on the site as possible, but definitely this time of year is such a big part. And so many of our loyal subscribers, they don't cancel and come back, they stay with it, and definitely appreciate that definitely helps us out, and we're going to do everything we can to put stuff on the site as well.
Yeah, definitely, it's a slow time, but we're going to still hype things up and make sure you guys get all the information you need about the Hurricanes. So summer's slow in terms of things that are happening at UM, but it's still an important time to cover what's going on.
All right, thanks guys for listening. We'll talk to you guys later.
Take care. Bye.
Bye.